Go back into South Bend's history. 20 years, 50 years, 100 years, and what do you see? You see people working to bring change to this city. They had different ideas of what that should be. They didn't always agree. Yet, in every decade, there were those for whom positive change was their life's work. This podcast, South Bend's Own Words, features the voices of people who made the city change. We'll share clips from oral histories done by the Indiana University South Bend Civil Rights Heritage Center that tell a more complete history. It's the story of many cultures, not just one. It's the story of South Bend. Elmer Joseph came to South Bend in 1944 from a resort community in Mississippi. His family was financially well off, yet still deeply impacted by Jim Crow segregation. He attended an all-black school and experienced a huge culture shock when he moved to South Bend to attend the largely white Central High. Elmer remembers some of the many West Side black businesses around Linden Street. He even opened up a business of his own, running a tavern on Chapin and Western. In 2003, Civil Rights Heritage Center historian David Healy sat down with Mr. Joseph. They talked about his experiences growing up on the West Side and what life was like for a black business owner in the mid-20th century.
Recollections of South Bend. Good morning, Mr. Joseph.
Good morning.
You are not a native of South Bend, is that correct?
No, I'm not. I came in August of 1944.
You came from Mississippi, correct?
We were raised in between Moss Point, Mississippi, and Pascagoula, which we called Eastside.
Before we get into South Bend history a little bit, but what was your education like? Did you feel it was adequate?
Oh, yeah. I'm very smart. In Mississippi, when I was in the second grade, the school burned down, an all-black school, and we had to go to a private school for a year. The white school they gave to us, and they built another new one for the white people, and we had another school called Magnolia High School. I went to all-black school, and when I went to South Bend Central, predominantly white.
Where did you live at in South Bend originally?
Liston Street.
And that was a very important ethnic neighborhood, businesses along Liston Street. Okay, so you must have known Lafayette Dusty Riddle, too.
Yes, I did. Dusty Riddle was the first black policeman. He was the guy that got my driver's license for me. I hope it doesn't incriminate him, but all I had to do is go to the courthouse and give him $5, and I got my driver's license at age 16.
You didn't take a test or anything?
I didn't have to take a test, but I didn't have an accident either.
They had an all-black baseball team called the Foundry Giants. So when did you graduate from Central?
I graduated from Central in 1946.
World War II is over. And
The Declaration was signed, but World War II was not over.
Okay. Yeah. But you didn't go into the Army.
They drafted me right out of high school.
They drafted you out of high school.
And so I was put in the Army Engineers. And I took my basic training at Fort Jackson, South Carolina. We were not allowed to go into Columbia, South Carolina because of the racial situation back in those days.
But you had some experience of that coming from Mississippi.
Oh, God. We didn't have too much in Mississippi, to tell you frankly, because we lived on the Gulf of Mexico. And it's not a farm area. It's a resort area. Always has been. So it's nothing but hotels and motels and everything else down there. It's always been a resort area, a beach area.
So you didn't feel that you suffered the racial...
Because of the image of my grandparents and whatever, they had a lot of influence down there. We had no problem. And we were kind of like the upper crust people.
Oh.
Yeah, we had no problem. And the fact my mother never worked in her life. The only thing, she just played for a church. She had a degree in music, and she played for a church for 53 years until she passed. Same church.
So your family was very well educated.
Yes, we are. To be frank, we are. There still are a lot of them, still getting education.
Now, when you came to South Bend, you couldn't go to the Natatorium because that was...
Well, it's only on Monday nights. It's the same thing when we were down south, and you speak about swimming, that on the far end of the Gulf of Mexico, we could swim the far end in Pascagoula, but the same order, but you couldn't swim up this way because that's a white people's area.
Okay.
So it's just like that. Same water, but just a philosophy, I guess.
What happened after you got out of the Army? You came back to South Bend?
Came back to South Bend, and I married and went to Studebaker's and to get a job.
Okay.
And they said the only opening we have would be in the foundry or the press room. I said, well, I don't think I need that. And at that time, they had a black guy in the front office. It's two black guys. And so my aunt knew Oliver Scott real well. She said, go over and see Oliver Scott personally. And he got me fixed up with working in plant two over there.
Now, how did Oliver do that?
I don't know what kind of strings he pulled, but I didn't worry about it. I wouldn't even worry about that. I got the job.
You didn't have to give him any gratuities or anything?
I gave him a little gratuities.
A little gratuity.
A few gifts. Yeah, I gave him a few gifts.
And so you
got A gift. Yeah.
Plant number two.
Yeah.
How long did you work at Studebaker?
1 year. I only worked in the factory 1 year in my life.
And what happened to you then?
I had $500, and my brother-in-law had $500. And we opened a tavern on Chapin Street.
What was the tavern's name?
The tavern at the time, it was better known as the Vidoc Inn. Because it was right at the Vidoc on Chapin. And I went into a tavern business. I and my brother-in-law, he worked at Bendix, and I was taking care of the business.
It had to cost you more than $1,000.
A $500 piece is all we put out.
Is that all you took to get into business?
Because there had been two or three previous owners before we purchased the building, and they wasn't successful at it from World War II up until we got it. And
what was the address of this?
511 South Chapin.
511 South Chapin. And the building's gone now.
Oh, yeah. They came in 1960 and cleaned out everything. All that area was cleaned up. At that time, there used to be a lot of restaurants and taverns in South Bend. It was just nothing but a bunch of bars, because they allow you to have a lot of liquor stores, and a lot of bars and blacks in those days. And that's about the only kind of business you could get into. But there was that was all blacks all down there. Nothing but blacks down there. Nothing but black cops. And because at those days, blacks were not allowed to arrest white people. But they were not allowed to go downtown. They only took care of their own, as they call it, which was us, black people. And most of all, on patrol Chapin Street.
Did you didn't have time to really belong to any groups or businessmen's groups, right?
Well, I tell you what, in 1954, there were some guys used to come and sit, and he's still living, the Jenkins family, two brothers of them. And they were graduated IU Bloomington. And they had moved to South Bend, and they were working for a company by the name of Atlas Mutual Life Insurance Company. And he used to come and sit all every day and all that, and say, what are you guys doing? What kind of job do you guys have? You can come here, and you know, it's all dressed up and clean. So he said, well, we're insurance guys. I said, hey, if you can do that, man, I need to do some of that. So he said, well, come on down. And I went with them, and I acquired an insurance license. So Atlas Mutual Life at that time was the smallest, it was only for the state of Indiana, smallest insurance company in existence. That's just about the name of it. And I started working for them. I used to sell insurance across the bar along with selling liquor.
So you could get a drink and an insurance policy.
You pay your premium right there. Save your time.
Okay.
Never do that. Right. But this is the time when bars are open at 6 o'clock in the morning and you close at 3:30 at night. So they don't make you do about 2.5-3 hours between openings and closing. You stayed open that many hours. Sundays you were closed. There was no liquor sold on Sunday.
You open at 6:30 in the morning.
6:30 in the morning
until 3:30
in the morning. Right. That's correct. And those many hours is too many hours so you can do a justice to your family. So I started selling insurance in 1960 until 1995. I became an insurance man for 35 years in South Bend. Started from the smallest company and worked for some of the largest.
Well, you had to buy a house somewhere along the line.
Bought this in 1959.
Did you have any problem buying the house?
Yeah. When I came out here, well, about 4 houses, 5 houses up, was people from my hometown, my uncle's relatives. And say, well, they say, well, we don't know whether you're going to be able to get it or not. And I say, well, that's the one I want, and that's what I'm going to get. Somehow or another, gave him $500 down again. My 500 seemed to be my number. Uh-huh. And so we moved in with a little bit we had, I and my wife, yeah, Barbara.
So you moved in here. Did they give you any reason why they're giving you the runaround for this house?
It's just a racist time during those times. It's just the idea that the real estate were not open to minority group people just in certain areas. When I came here, you couldn't get a job unless you go see Smoke Pierce.
Really? Listen?
Yeah. You go see Smoke, if you're okay with Smoke, and he called downtown, who he called down there, you're in. You know, I mean, he just had that much power by being in bar business because he had that much power in the community. Yeah, you go see Smoke, you got a job automatically.
You mean a job where? I mean,
well, downtown and the banks and the other different places when they start hiring those people. Well, whatever position down there was political.
So Smoke Pierce had that kind of power.
He was Mr. Democrat. Like if you went to Chicago, they talk about Daley.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then Smoke was like that.
He was a Democrat.
He had a Democrat. Yeah.
And he supported the Democratic Party.
That's correct. He and my uncle were in business together. You know, he had the lotto, we call it now, which is legal. Well, they had the unlegal, as they call it, gambling. You know, gambling is gambling to me. Mm-hmm. But back in those days, it was illegal to what they were doing, like the numbers game. And a lot of guys went to prison dealing with the numbers game, owning the numbers game. But then a lot of them can make it legalized in the state and do the same thing, because a gambler is a gambler.
Yeah.
Regardless.
J. Chester Allen was state representative in 1930. You know, yeah. Did you know Attorney Allen, J. Chester?
Yes. My aunt knew all of the prominent people because she was in clubs with all of those different people. Because I ran for state representative too at one time.
You did?
Well, yes, I did.
What year was that?
1968.
And
I ran on the Democratic ticket with Bernard White. And I lost by 35 votes.
You lost by 35?
Lost by 35 votes. Correct.
You were part of the Democratic Party then?
Yes. I've been a Democrat all my life. But when I came along, I belonged to the All-American Democratic Club.
And this was an all-black?
All-black. All-black.
So the clubs basically were a format for people to come and talk?
Half candidates come in and question them as to what are you going to do for black people, what is your program about, and whatever, et cetera, like that. To see blacks who've been so oppressed, as you'd have to be black to know it, but you're oppressed all your life because they don't give you advantages that you should have, and they don't do for whatever you do. So the principle of the All-American Democrat Club that we have is that if you can't support us, we don't vote for you. Just like that. In other words, if you don't have some program set aside for us to say that you're going to do something or whatever it's going to be, then we program you not to vote. We program people not to vote for that individual.
So you were active in the community talking to people about who to vote for.
Well, yes, we have a lot of membership, a lot of people. I mean, it's been so many disappointments in the black community by people running and and people don't support them even though they get out there. You know, let's face it, we still have that system in this country that we live in today, you know. So what we did is just trying to encourage people to vote. Mm-hmm. I've never misspoken in my lifetime. I never will. Because people have died in the civil rights movement and everything else for voting. And I don't see why people don't, but they just get discouraged, I think.
Or they don't know the history.
Yeah, and don't know the history, don't follow the background of the history, right, of what people have done. Correct.
You mentioned the Metropolitan Improvement Association. What was that?
Mutual Improvement Association. Mutual. 1960, Mr. Haynes Funeral Home, and a bunch of black people in South Bend form a club to teach people how to save money. Because blacks ordinarily would have no money for any incidents to come up and whatever. And so we formed what was called a Mutual Improvement Association Incorporated. I was president in 1960, and we start meeting every month and had people put in a dollar or two, and people would get in, maybe going to jail for a minor offense or something like that. We'd bond them out, bail them out. If you need an old car, you ain't got no way to get to work and whatever, we'd buy you an old car, stuff like that. That's what the purpose of it was, you know, loan you $500 or whatever amount of money it is. And,
so the Mutual Improvement Association is actually a self-help organization for African Americans.
For black Americans, that's right. We had 520 members on the books. And we had accumulated quite a bit of money. And the body decided to buy the 24-hour grocery Terry on the corner of Warner and West Washington.
Now this business was called a
24-hour grocery Terry.
So the 24-hour, so like a little shopping mart thing.
Yeah, 24-hour grocery tour. It had a barbecue place on it and a grocery tour. It took us about 6 months. You had to put 10% down. The man won $125,000 in 1970, which was quite a bit of money. He had paper, that stack, that many applicants, I tell you, that high. To get that $125, well, we had to put in $12,500, 10%. For the 125, and then they'd send somebody in and check the books every month from Chicago. And people didn't do what they say is going to do. All the members say, well, we spend $20 a week. Well, we figure that up. That's enough to take care of it without the outside public. And out of those 520 people, we only got about 10 people that came to shop there. And it got less and less. If people would have done what they say they did, we'd have been, probably would have had many stores as Kroger's got around here, you know, because if they had done what they said it, but they didn't do what they said it. So we had to liquidate it in 72.
What did you see about the civil rights movement? What did you remember about it? Did you see a change in South Bend? Did you see benefits from it?
Oh, yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think people were more conscientious. South Bend is the only liberal, the most liberal place in the state of South Bend, in the state of Indiana. It's always been pretty good. But if you go within 20 miles that way, or 20 back years ago, or 20 miles that way, you're in trouble as a black man.
South Bend's Own Words was created by Kevin Tidd Marsh and me, George Garner. This episode was produced by John Watson from the Ernestine M. Racklin School of the Arts at Indiana University South Bend, and by me through the Civil Rights Heritage Center. Visit us and learn how IU South Bend students inspired the transformation of a once segregated South Bend swimming pool. We give guided tours and offer public events that show how the history of oppression echoes through this city today. See and hear more history, plan your visit, or share your thoughts about this episode, all at crhc.iusb.edu.